Hi, and thank you very much for joining us for the webinar today. We'll be talking about pricing considerations. One of the biggest questions that ISVs have when they're moving from on-prem to the cloud is, how do we price our solution? I've been working with ISVs for more than 20 years, helping them set up the right business strategy, the right go-to-market strategy for their solutions. So I've worked with, from the early days, mainframe and mid-range companies, then there was client-server, then we had thin client, we had the ASP bubble for a little bit, and now we have the cloud. And what that does, it puts me in a position to see technology and business models as a continuum. So while we hear a lot about the cloud being disruptive, I really see it as being an extension of other business models and technologies. And we've been working with Microsoft for the last 7-8 years now with ISVs around the world, lots of different companies, different sizes, different technologies. And for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been focused on what makes the cloud different. What are the aspects of the business model that need to change? And how do companies manage that change and still make a living while they're going through the transition? This is part of a series of webinars. We've had 3 of them so far. If you didn't view them live, don't worry, they're all available online. This one is taped, but I'm here for a Q&A, as we'll come back to. So we've talked about changing business operations, and that really focused on the key strategic decisions a company needs to make. We've talked about the target markets for a cloud solution. In the last module, we looked at the sales and marketing strategy. And in the ones coming up in the next 2, we'll look at financial metrics, how you measure your performance on an ongoing basis, and then the legal issues that are specific to the cloud. If you can, I would encourage you to watch these in order. They're built in a logical sequence, but it's not critical that you do so. And do stick around for the Q&A. As I mentioned, this is obviously a recorded session, but I will be logging in for the Q&A. So for those of you that are watching this in real time, please stick around and feel free to ask questions, and I'll do my best to answer them for you. So the topics that we're going to go through today, we'll first talk about pricing basics, and some of these, and most of them actually apply whether it's on-premise or the cloud. We're going to spend a little bit of time looking at all the different pricing models that are available for the cloud, because there's a lot more flexibility, a lot more creativity when it comes to pricing models for cloud solutions. I'm also going to talk about freemium, because that's a very popular way of getting your product out to the market. And I'll talk about the advantages and disadvantages so that you'll have an idea of whether or not freemium is right for you. I'll also give you a very quick and easy formula for how you convert your on-premise pricing to a subscription model, what the ratio should be. We'll talk a little bit about cost-based pricing and why that isn't necessarily the best way to go. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about how you handle discounts for cloud solutions. So pricing is more than just a number. We've worked with a lot of ISVs that are moving from on-prem to the cloud, and they say, well, gee, let's just try this number. There are a lot of factors that go into determining what that number should be. For example, competition. It's not just your other on-prem competitors, but where we see companies sometimes getting a little bit of a disconnect in the pricing is where they're going through a traditional on-prem to cloud, and they end up with, well, here's our monthly subscription. And then they find out that they're competing against companies that are born in the cloud, that built their application from the ground up as a subscription model. And what we have found consistently is that born in the cloud ISVs tend to underprice their product. And we're seeing just in general that pricing is increasing over time. But if you're in a market where you're competing head-on with someone that's born in the cloud, you may find that you're going to have much more pressure on your pricing. Services. Do you have a product, whether it's delivered on-prem or in the cloud, that drives a lot of services revenues? The more services you drive, the more flexible you can be on pricing your product, because the product becomes an entree, a way to generate those services. And what's the technology? We'll talk about cost-based pricing, and it shouldn't really be a driver, but there is a big difference in your cost if you are ASP versus multi-tenant pure SaaS. Customer discounts, we'll talk about that. The customer type, you would typically have different pricing for small, mid-size, and large companies. You look at the payment terms. The pricing can vary by the commitment that the company is willing to make. Are they willing to sign up for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? That can also have an impact on their pricing. And then finally, are they an existing customer? Are you transitioning them? Have they been a good loyal customer? Is this an upsell to an existing customer? So all of these factors play in when you're determining what your price, what that number should be. So if you look at some of the basic principles of pricing, in the cloud, less is more. We've talked earlier about how important it is to have automation in the sales and marketing process, how a lot of the sales and marketing needs to be self-service. And that means that the pricing needs to be simple to understand as well. This next slide, this is just an example of how not to do it. Here you have the four different tiers, or three different tiers of pricing. Long checklist is very confusing, and this ends up actually discouraging people from signing up for anything because they can't really measure what the difference is between. There's just too many things to look at. You have to look at what the impact on partners is. Look at your channel partners and the pricing and the discounts that they get. That will have a big impact on their ability to make money. And internationally, are you going to be pricing in US dollars? Do you have separate pricing for in pounds or euros? Do you have worldwide pricing? All of these are considerations that you have to work your way through. And then finally, impact on logistics. We'll come back to this as we talk about the different types of pricing models that are available, but the more complex your pricing model is, the more complex your provisioning and your billing will be. So let's look at pricing models. This is an overview of 9 different types of pricing models. We'll go into each one of them and I'll give you some examples, but they break down into 3 basic categories. The first one is free usage. That's where people can use your product as basic function without paying anything. Freemium is a perfect example of this. You can sign up for Skype, Dropbox, the SkyDrive, Evernote, and they all have a free version of the product. And what they want to do then is upsell you to a $10, $20, $30 subscription. This really requires automation. If the product is free to use, you can't afford to have a high cost of customer acquisition. There needs to be a very large addressable market. I'll come back to this when I talk about the freemium. And simplicity is the watchword here. Simple to explain, simple to install, simple to pay. It has to be a full self-service model. Then there's the ad-based model. Facebook and Yahoo are 2 examples of that. You can use their applications free, and then they sell access to your demographics for a price to advertisers. And that's just where most of the money comes in. So your job as a vendor is to deliver eyeballs. And this really takes us back to the dot-com era, where the business model was build up 1 million eyeballs, and that has some type of commercial value, and then you can sell your business onward. It can be broad-based or focused. So Facebook, of course, and Yahoo, very broad-based. They're attracting a large audience. But you can also have ad-based revenues if you have a very specific target market, a vertical market or a geography, or better yet, a combination. Because the more focused it is, the more value it'll have for advertisers going into that specific market as well. Stickiness is important. The number of page views, the amount of time people spend on your pages. This is what drives the ad revenue. If you have 3 seconds of average viewing, that doesn't have nearly as much value to an advertiser as a page that people will watch for 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. So it's really important to build in stickiness, engagement, that keep people on that page instead of moving on to something else. And then you have to have a method of collecting demographic data, because that's the value that you're selling to advertisers, the ability to target specific demographics. So another free use model is related services. Zynga is the poster child for this, the Farmville. It's free to use a basic application or the game, and then you start paying for add-ons. In some cases, you have a very large upfront development cost, and you have to be able to maintain the game, new games, to keep people interested. Marketplaces are a great way to market these types of applications, where you spread the distribution of information and marketing through marketplaces. Cross-promotion and transparency. In this last part, what I'm referring to here is that if there are additional charges that people will incur, you need to be very transparent and inform them of that. Smurf Village is an iPhone app, and there have been a number of them where people were complaining because the game was free to use, and then kids would be on the parents' phone, and it would automatically trigger additional usage charges, and you had these horror stories of people running into thousands of dollars in monthly bills because there was no transparency, there was no disclosure that each additional feature would cost more money. And then we have pricing models per unit, per some type of a metric, per transaction, per user, per device. The unit of measure, this is typical for storage. Mosey and Carbonite, you pay for the amount of storage that you're using. Windows Azure is per unit of measure. With Azure, you're paying for storage, you're paying for bandwidth, the price is tied very much to what you're consuming. These tend to be commodity services. You have to make it as easy as possible for people to use the feature or the functionality. And in some cases, and we all know this from Azure, the broader the offering, the more options there are, the more complex the billing becomes. And if you're doing this type of pricing in anything with the cloud, if you want volume, try to make the pricing as simple as possible. Transaction pricing, there's a company in New Zealand that does invoice processing online, and they charge per invoice that they process. NeoGrid is a company that has an automated auction process for procurement, and their pricing is based on each auction that a company sets up. So this is great because it's very value-based pricing. You're paying for what you use. You can have this as either very detailed per item, per auction, for example, or you can do it in tiers. The invoice pricing is normally some base price per invoice for tiers of 0 to 1,000, 1,000 to 5,000, 5,000 to 20,000, and so on. Again, make it easy to use. The more complex the pricing, the more complex your billing system needs to be, the more you will need to get we've talked about this before, Matanga, or some type of a billing service that handles all of this for you. And then per user, per device, this is what we're seeing in mobility. And Avima has a technology that reduces the cost of managing mobile subscriptions by going in and matching the usage that individuals have with what the company is paying the mobile company, and they're able to reduce the overall cost by 15% on the mobile phone bills. Ubitex is a company that was bought by BlackBerry, but it was IT services management for mobile devices. And the beauty of mobile pricing per user is that in many cases, there are more devices than users. Within a company, you can have a user that has multiple sales telephones. They could have tablets. They could have phablets. They could have three or four different devices. So you end up getting a multiple per user instead of just paying charging per user. And then we get into the very traditional, typical payment models, and that's the monthly subscription. Some price per user per month. Office 365, Salesforce, NetSuite, they're all example of this. What's become a very typical subscription model pricing. Very easy to explain, very easy to understand. You can say, okay, if I've got 1,000 users or 5 users, this is the price per user, and this is how much I pay. The term of the contracts can vary. NetSuite, for example, they go out and they advertise a per user per month, but you have to sign a 12-month commitment for the first year, and then it's monthly renewals after that. The revenue sharing. And this is, again, really value-based pricing, but Parallels. Parallels has marketplace technology and billing technology. I've been very successful with it. Avangate has also billing and affiliate marketing programs, and both of them charge no upfront fees. It's a pure consumption model, and they get a participation in the revenues that go through their particular platform. The question that comes up here is runaway success. What if the company that is subscribing to your service runs a lot more transactions through there than they had expected? The price could end up becoming, from their perspective, exorbitant. And you may want to manage expectations or have some type of a cutoff or some type of tiered pricing that allows them to reduce the exposure. But this is really a complex billing because it is pure consumption. You really do need to have a first-rate billing technology in order to be able to manage this. And then the final element of the pricing models that are out there is a perpetual license. And although it doesn't sound like this really belongs in the cloud, there are companies that do sell and sell perpetual licenses. Acumatica is a cloud-based ERP product that is built on Azure. It's a full multi-tenant, but they will sell this as an on-premise product if someone wants to run it on their data center, or they can buy it as a monthly subscription. And Salesforce, you see the Salesforce logo and say, well, what's that got to do with perpetual licenses? Because Salesforce, they're the poster child of the cloud. Everything is per user, per month, and so on, right? No, there are large enterprise companies because of the total cost of ownership or because they have their own very large data center where they can run this on a cost-effective basis in-house, don't want to have their data sitting on somebody else's data center. So Salesforce does sell perpetual on-premise licenses for their technology to a select group of very large customers. So the point here is that when you're going out and selling, you can have your teaser price of $79 per user per month, but there's nothing wrong with going in and having a perpetual license fee if you're selling into the enterprise model. There's no reason why you can't just extend your on-premise pricing. It overcomes the TCO concerns, the total cost of ownership concerns. We talked about this in the last webinar, that the CFOs in the enterprise base sit down and look at, well, is it really worthwhile paying on a perpetual rental model, or should they buy the product up front? So it overcomes that concern. You then have to bill for the infrastructure separately. So if you're selling the perpetual license in effect, or the one-time upfront license, then you need to have some type of billing to cover the costs of the infrastructure. Whether that is a pass-through on Azure or it's your own hosting, you need to be able to bill that on a monthly basis. So again, no reason in the enterprise space why you shouldn't have a perpetual pricing model as part of the mix. So freemium. Freemium is a very popular way of getting an application out into the market. The key here is that it needs a lot of potential users because the average conversion rate runs between 1% and 3%. By conversion rate, we're referring to the percentage of people that sign up for the freemium that then sign up for a paid version of that product. Only 1% to 3% of people that are using the free version step up and pay for a professional version of the product. That means that you need to have a very large addressable market. That's why it works for people like Dropbox, it works for Evernote, very large addressable market, millions and millions of potential users. But you also have to have an enormous marketing budget to drive traffic to your website, to drive enough free users to get the volume that you need for the upsells. I'll give you a numerical example here. So let's say that you don't have a Dropbox or an Evernote type application. Let's say it's more specific to an industry or more a geography, and that you have a total addressable market of 100,000, which is still a pretty good addressable market. Well, if you do a really good job of your marketing and you drive 20% of the addressable market to your website, which is a huge number, that would be 20,000 visitors. And then let's say that you do a really good job on your website and you convert 10% of the visitors to the freemium model. That means you now have 2,000 freemium users on your website. If you get that 1% to 3% conversion rate, it means that you have 20 to 60 paying customers. Now think about that. Out of 2,000 customers that are using your product, 20 to 60 are paying for it. But the other 2,000 are all using the resources. They're all using the product. And you've had to spend marketing money to drive 2,000 subscribers, of which 20 to 60 actually pay. For most companies, for most technologies, the numbers for freemium simply don't work. So then what's the difference between freemium and free trials? Because in the last webinar on the sales and marketing strategies, I said that you should use free trials wherever possible because it shortens the sales cycle. Well, the difference is that freemium is the limited is a limited use product for an unlimited duration. So it's a small subset or some subset of the total functionality, but people can use it forever. Free trial is a full-featured product for a limited duration. So they get to use all of the features of the product, but for a limited period of time, normally 14 to 30 days. So that's the distinction. With a free trial, the customers or the prospects are forced to make a decision. Do we buy the product, continue to use it? Do we like it well enough to pay for it? Or they just drop off? With freemium, the base product could be good enough. In many cases, it is. In 97% of the cases, it is. It's good enough for a customer to use without having to pay for anything more. So the pricing conversion. Here's a quick and easy formula that's used by a lot of companies. It's a very rough approach to it, but we call it the rule of threes. In the rule of threes, you take your on-premise license price, you add in 3 years of maintenance, divide that by three, and that becomes the annual subscription value, or you divide it by 36, and that becomes the monthly. So if you look at an on-premise software product that sells for $100,000 with 20% of maintenance, you take the $100,000, add 3 times 20, $160,000, divide that by 3, and that becomes the annual subscription price, which works out to be roughly $53,000, or about $4,500 a month. And when you look at a lot of products, most of them fall into a conversion ratio of roughly 30 to 40 months. So this isn't a bad place to start, and then you have to match that up against competition and see if this is a price that you can carry through, but this is a quick and easy way of doing it. But the converse of that is that it's a 3-year payback, and this is what we talked about with the CFOs. They sit and look at it and say, well, if you as a vendor are effectively getting your money back in 3 years, that means that the break-even point for me is 3 years, and that becomes a much tougher sell. So this is one of the reasons in the enterprise space and for larger applications that are used for a long period of time, very difficult to win the TCO, the total cost of ownership argument with a CFO on a subscription model. Now let's talk about cost-based pricing. We have customers that start by saying, well, gee, we're going to have Azure, or we're going to have virtual machines, or we're going to have dedicated servers, and they start building up their cost structure, and then they build in their margin saying, well, that's how we're going to price our product. Well, what do customers care about? They care about value delivered and commitments kept. That's all they care about. What don't they care about? They really don't care what it costs you and about your ROI. They just want to know what the benefit is to them. You're very rarely going to end up with the right price level if you start with cost-based, start adding in your margins. Now, you may need to do that to figure out what your profitability is. You need to have a good understanding of what your underlying costs are, but the underlying costs shouldn't drive the product price. The value delivered should drive that price. Now, let's talk about discounts. One of the nice things about the cloud today is that the discounting is much lower than it is for on-premise. Industry-wide, across applications in the United States in 2012, the average discount on on-premise software ran between 19 and 23%. Because it's such a big target, very rarely does anybody sell an on-premise license at full list price. It's almost always price negotiation going on. And again, the average discount is 19 to 23%. The average discount for SaaS is much lower. There is a perception that SaaS is a standard product delivered at a standard price, and there's less quibbling about the price with an end user. If the price is $29 per user per month, that tends to be the price. So the average discounts on SaaS are in the 7 to 9% range. And the 7 to 9% isn't really a discount from the list price, it's a discount based on some other metric. For example, if you're getting started and you want some reference accounts, you provide a bigger discount to the first customers. There's also discounting based on the length of the contract. We talked earlier about the benefit to you of having customers locked in for a year, 3 years, 5 years. So you can actually offer them a discount saying that, well, this is a month to month, or say it's a monthly contract for a year. If you sign up for 3 years, we'll give you 5, 6, 7% discount. The other way of discounting is on the payment frequency. Contracts might run for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, but they might be paying on a monthly basis. If you want to accelerate the payment process, then you can offer them a more aggressive discount for paying upfront. So they might be signing a contract for 3 years with a monthly payment. And you say, if you pay this on an annual basis, or you pay the 3 years upfront, here's the discount that you get. Then the customers can measure that discount against their own cost of capital internally to see if this is going to be a good decision for them. So you can see that there are a lot of different elements of pricing. A lot of the elements of pricing for SaaS are the same ones that you're looking at for on-premise. So finally, I want to take you through very quickly an online business modeling tool that Microsoft has developed exclusively for its ISVs. It's a very comprehensive model that covers every aspect of your business planning. It goes through your pricing models, it goes through your Azure consumption, talks about customer segmentation, go-to-market strategies, all of the costs associated with that. You can build in growth models, you can build in your churn rate, your cost of development, and your ongoing support costs. All of that is fed into a 4-year monthly P&L. And then you can play with the assumptions. You can change your pricing, you can change your go-to-market strategies, you can change your churn rate, and immediately see the impact on your profitability over a 4-year period. Microsoft is making this available exclusively to its ISVs. Because it is such a comprehensive model, it requires a tutorial. You can get a 3-hour tutorial through us by registering on our website. It's $795. During the tutorial, we set you up with your own user account. We can start feeding in your own information, walk you through every aspect of it, and then answer questions that are specific to your situation, and really give you a useful tool that you have at the end of the day. If you go onto our website, in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a link directly to the registration page. Again, just to remind you that this is part of a series of webinars. If you have the ability to watch these sequentially, I would recommend that you do so. It's not critical that you do, but there is a logical buildup in the structure. Here's my contact information. If you have any questions that I can help with, shoot me an email or call me. I will be very happy to answer any questions that you have. And as mentioned, this is a taped but live event. So if you are watching this live, please feel free to fire away with any questions that you have, and I'll do the best I can to answer them while we're here. And thank you very much for your time today.